Mastery at the Laird's Ha, Chapter 1, Pluttering About in Boats. Robbie was just setting his breakfast plate to put a draining board when his mother came into the kitchen with a meal at posty was drapped along. He glipped the last of his tea and set down the empty mug. "Anything for me?" he asked, with a bit of a smeag. "Nothing of a," his mother said, looking through the 20 letters in her hand. "Less for bills, and you can pay them if you want." They both gaffed at that. She clapped at the top of his head as she got to the press. She hauled out a muggle pan and set it up with a hob. "That's a splendid day," she said. "What are you going to get up to?" Robbie had plenty of ideas. The second day of the summer holidays and a fine spell of weather meant it was just right for going off in his boat or cycling around or maybe purling about the banks for rackweed that he could drag back home with a flat bottom. Same money options. He laid off his smocks and hauled his trainers out from under the share and tied up his laces. "Me and George might ging and trawl through the skips and see if there any scran worth getting." Dat, his mother said, setting the kettle down and snacking it on. "Lord, for the brook that you bear has dragged him over the years. The mist ought gaan straight back to the skip whenever thy father has a lot to gain. Mind and watch yourselves for broken glass, for there are kind of gear that gets bailed in yon skips. Folk is never thinking about you youngins climbing through it." Yeah, we'll be careful," he said, as he muttoned his jacket and made for the front door. "See you after, ma'am." "Okay, then it'll be but one, if you're here." "Maybe yeah, maybe no," came the reply, Robbie leaving the door lying to the back of Huntham. "Tak George along for his two," she roared after him. "It's lentil soup." But she was speaking to herself, for Robbie was halfway to the shade to get his bike out by the time that she finished. It was cooler in the shade and smelt of the usual mixture of oil and petrol and fresh sawdust for when his father was being cutting up wood to make a new grind for the garden. There was still the smell of pent for when he was had his boat in 20 weeks afore to get her a dichting up for the summer. He got the bike hauled out by the workbench and out the door into the daylight, feeling the breeze upon his face as he went up the sit and started paddling up the road to George's house. It was only about half a mile to the Tugs where George bade, and he was just coming up to the cattle grid when he saw George's fader, Christy, coming down the hill in his pickup. Robbie brought up by the verge. As Christy came closer, he slowed down and made out to swerve into Robbie with a quick slew of the steering wheel, his muckle beaming face ahint the windscreen. His window was already done with a fine day, and he snickered off the engine as he stopped next to the bike. "Now then, here's one half of the terrible twosome," Christy said, smiling at Robbie. "What's this that was on the day?" A dog was jumping about to the back of the pickup, making her shack a grain. "Hello, Christy," says Robbie. "I'm just on my way up to see George. Is he about?" Yeah, he's in. Ging do a lang. There no been muckle steer with him so far, but he said he was looking in the lang. It's too blithe to get the holidays." "Yeah, that I am. 6 weeks to do whatever I want. Can't wait." Boy, said Christy, as he started the engine of the pickup and pattering gear. "I doubt that's far o'er muckle time off," he gaffed. "Behave yourselves now." And with that, he drave off, hiding his arm up out the open window. Robbie held his hand up to the wave, and the dog at the back looked like he was doing the same up along the back door afore he turned round and carried on bummel about from side to side as the pickup drave out of sight round the corner. Robbie was broken sweet by the time he went up to the now to the Tugs. He leant his bike along the trailer and made in through the open front door. "George," he roared, "is the wind?" He squatted in the sitting room door. There were nae sign of him there or in the kitchen. Robbie was just about to roar upon him again when the cupboard door flew open and George burst out, tackling Robbie to the ground and setting a foot upon his back. Robbie let out a yelp as George snudded his smock around upon his riggy bane. "Oh, dinner, let me ging," said Robbie, braken free and standing up, a pretty bit mair pleased when he went to his foot again. He gave George a boof up the air. "Ha," said George. "Oh, sorry, I thought there was a robber. Good job I didn't keep the puddings in. I saw thee pooing in with the bike and thought I would hide for thee and gluff thee. Did thou pass feyther by the rod?" "Thou didna gluff me a va, for I kent thou was in yonder," came back Robbie, although he was lame with what he said. "Yeah, I spak with thy feyther. And he said there's a lazy derision in his yarn to get thee to hock out the septic tank with thy bare hands." "No, he didna, and I did gluff thee, admit it." They wandered through to the kitchen, and George regged down twa tumblers for the press, lifted the bottle of squash off of the sideboard, and put a pretty grain in every glass. "So what are we going to do today?" he said, filling the tumblers for the cold tap and handing in to Robbie. "I don't ken. We could ging for a wander round the bank seeking rackwood, or ging for a cycle somewhere, or we could ging to the skip for a luke." Robbie glipped down his juice, slogging the trust he was gotten for the lang pick up the rod. "Nah, cycling's boring. We should ging off of thy boat. Hey, I came something far better we could do. I found twa auld creels last week doon at the pier. We could tap them off and set them, then lift them the morning and see what we're gotten." George's face lit up with the thought of getting a couple of muckle partons or maybe even a lobster. "Yeah, we could, that's an idea. Wha's creels are they though? We cannot just tack either fox gear," Robbie told him, setting his empty tumbler down upon the draining board. "It's old eens that Wally Spoot doesn't need any mair. He said that I could hae them, but they might need trigging up a grain, for they're no been used for a brass start. Be good fun though, wouldn't it?" "Is thou wanting some mair juice?" George asked, for he was finished his too. "Yeah, I'll tak another glass. Whaur would be set the skrills? Mam doesna want me gyan ower far awa with a boat, so it would hae to be some way close in. But I would catch there as green crabs." "We'll do better do as thy mam says," George said, setting the glasses down. He pat on a high-pitched lass's voice, gathered his hair up in tusks like pretty pigtails and dancing around Robbie. "Better no go to sight of the horse and minding me and bed be half seven." George carried on his pretty jig, but Robbie can't not arise to the bed. "Oh, shut up. That's no like that. She's just a worries. I'm no a mammy's boy." "Okay, then. We'll ging farther off and set the creels if that makes thee happy," he said, sticking his foot out and tripping George when he danced by him. He did an overly far, rolling about by the floor and gaffing for a start before he got up, and they both made for the outer door. Robbie gaffed, "Thou sick a fool, George." They got out to the shade for a start and hawked about by a old tractor that George's feyther was cindered for spares. George's bike was been abandoned with a puncture for a day or twa, but they weren't lang fixing that. Then they good to turn out the rod to check it afore stopping lang the shop for juice up at the way back. Afore lang it was nearly dinner time, so they jumped back up at their bikes and cycled to Robbie's, where the boat was. It was fairly warming up now with the sun high in the sky, and in the vaux, twa the boats was heading out to ging fishing. Some was half sailing in a dinghy, but no making muckle headway, for they were hardly a purr of wind. When in the Robbie's house, they set their bikes along the deck next to the grind and made for the kitchen, where Robbie's mother was steering a muckle pot of soup. She was heard them coming through the house, and as they came through and they got to the door, she turned spak to them. "Weel, no, that's a right pair of ullets come in. Hello, George, what why is do the day?" The pair of them set themselves down at the table, Robbie shuffling along the back chairs while they were shoved up for Nance de Wa. "I'm fine, thanks," George replied. "Fairly looking forward to the holidays. Shame I don't hae anybody right to hang around with but him, though," he said, pointing at Robbie. "But at least he has a boat." "Oi," said Robbie, smeagin' as his mother gaff. "Yeah, Will, mind and be careful of yon boat, and take warm clothes with you, for it's aye colder up at the sea. And Robbie, mind doing again out back." Yeah, I can, ma'am. You don't need to tell me every time," Robbie said, as George kicked him under the table and ragged up to his hair to make pigtails again, shaking his head from side to side. Robbie kicked him back harder and bawled a magazine at him, both of them gaffing. That'll do you too, said Robbie's mother, as she carried two bowls of soup over to the table. Here, tak this afore you ging out, for there's likely no muckle of a galley up at the pretty flat bottom. As they supped at their dinner, they spoke about the things they could do with the boat over the summer, and were getting brawly excited at the thought of the different places they might explore. Robbie was hoping that his mother would let him ging a pretty bit farther out now that he was a year older, maybe out as far as the Green Head, but thought it better not to bring it up in case she said no. He was afraid that George would do something silly as usual and ruin it, so he would maybe bring it up another time. They were just eating their soup and sandwiches when Robbie's father came in for the shade for his dinner. He yarned with them a pretty start, and was all blithe to hear they were going off of the boat with a fine day, rather as spinning before the computer or TV. As they hauled on their boots and took their jackets off of the backs of their chairs, he said they were to watch themselves and to mind and put their life jackets on. Closing the grind in front of the house of Huntham, Robbie and George wandered down over the park to the beach where the boat lay, with their life jackets slung over their shoulders. They made a plan that they would tack the boat down to the Muckle Pier and tie up there, find the twa creels at George Kento, and hopefully get them aboard and gang straight off to set them. It was a mair fun coming into the pier, rather as hauling her up the beach. It felt like they were in a bigger boat tying up next to the mucklings, and they could rig ropes fore and aft and put finders down. It was only 2 minutes down over for the hoose. Rather as tak the langer gate through the muckle yard, they clam over the fence, snirking the wires as they could. They loop it over the pretty burn and down onto the shingle of the beach, with George nearly gyan his length when he stood upon a lump of wire that was lying about the high tide mark. At the south end of the pretty beach was the noose where the flat bottom was. Robbie A felt awful pleased when he saw his boat, for he really loved her. She was 8 foot long and had 2 tafts in her, and the inn at the starn had a pretty cubby hole under it for keeping his dorrow, a spare nail and a length of rope. He was hader for nearly 3 year now, and man a rode miles and miles, taking him heaps of wood and brook for the beach and exploring the shore and banks a' about the vow. The oars was well worn where they were being at the rowlocks, and there were script marks upon the gunnels where he was dragged with the board. Ony bigger bits like spars he would tow hunt them. He was just finished pending her no longer for the start of the holidays and was giving her a new name, Dunter. He was only been off in her once for she got back of the water. It would have been mair as that, for he was going to launch her upon a Friday, but his grandfather said there were no why he was doing that and changing the name, for it was baith bad luck. So he had to put her down the day after instead. That was a day as thick it must, so he couldn't have gone off very far or for very long, but just long enough to remind himself how muckle he enjoyed being in her. As they wandered over to the noose, he thought she was looking great. He was painted outside, and the taft's dark green were red strip about the gunnels, and Ferguson grey about inside. They clapped on their life jackets and set about getting the boat unfastened and hauled down to the water's edge. George, will do put the nail in while I undo this burrup? Robbie asked, croaking down upon his hookers to louse the rope for the old winch he used to fasten her to the noose. George screwed in the plastic nail and he set the oars and the rowlocks ready for launching. Okay, that's what's ready to go, I think, Robbie said, feeling good about the responsibility of having a boat and taking his best friend off in her. He had his hand about the stem and the burp whopped about his left wrist 20 times, ready for her gyan in the water. With George at the starn pooing and Robbie at the bow shiving, they soon had the flat bottom gathering speed out the shingle to the ape. Usually Robbie would lay the lins for drawing down the boat, but with a pair of them hauling, there were nae need for them. She slipped down out the ape easy and yach upon her keel. George got into the water nearly to the top of his boots as he felt the starn start to float and the murlin of the beach turned into the smooth feeling of the water under her. He stood to the side to let the oar that was sticking out pass him by. The noise of the jungle was replaced with the sound of air gurgling under the boat and the splash of the pair of them as they got the boat manoeuvred round, say that she was facing bow out the way. "I'll get in first, say I can row," said Robbie, after balling the panther over the middle taft up to the bow. "But what if I want to row?" George asked, kind of half sitting up with a starring gunnel to steady the boat. "What? Do never wants to row for those our lazy," Robbie said to him, climbing aboard and setting him down up with a taft. "I can. I far prefer it for thee to tap me wherever I want to go," George gaffed and good on with scampeth in his voice. "Now then, driver, how about you row me to the pier for my creels?" He swung his legs out of sight and set him up with a starn sit, no noticing that he was taking a lock of water aboard with him. The taft was socking right where he set him down. "Ha ha, those can't hear a weak backside now," Robbie gaffed, sliding the oars out through the rowlocks and into the water. "Serves thee right for being lazy." "Oh no, I'm a weak," George said, shulling the reebs of water after the newly panted wind. "Ha ha, never mind, huddle dry, and I can't do it, never let me row anyway." "That's right," Robbie said proudly, "and she's a great boat. No, let's gang to the pier, George. Do's navigator." They set off round the point where Piri Wake hunt them, the ripples hitting the bow with every stroke of the oars, and George hanging out of sight and skeeting water on Robbie's face. He didna mind a va, for he was that blithe to be off in his boat, thinking about a' the adventures he would hae with her.